Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Sounds that you're lucky that I play favorites around here, because I would just be, if you weren't yourself, I'd be taking the belt away from you because you didn't even pick up the belt today.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So slack.
You could take it away, I understand. I wasn't thinking about it today. I came in just shot out. It was cold. I wasn't even thinking about the belt. Because I feel like the champ every day, even without it, Bubba.
There you go, buddy.
That's how you roll.
There you go. We'll just keep it here. No sense of fingering it up now.
Let's not. Yeah, I don't want to mess up this whatever I'm wearing.
This interview. This big-time Anthony Becht interview.
Yeah, and I'm wearing the smock today. I don't want to mess it up with a belt.
Your eye tape ankles for the lightning smock. I'm just saying.
I know. This is...
ankle taping, boy. I need a right ankle job here.
Imagine Dr. Dan brings his doctor bag, and I'm standing next to him at the mall. Like, people think that we're some heavy-hitting doctors,
Dan,
for sure.
Have you ever had a tape ankles before, Dan?
No.
No, for real, like...
Yeah, no. The answer is no.
There is, but there...
Is it beneath you?
But no, hold on.
Oh.
I don't think completely. It's beneath you. I also think there's a...
Only completely is his answer.
Ankles are important.
Yeah, ankles matter.
I think Dan's being a dick because I think that there's probably an art to taping ankles.
There is.
And you don't know it.
I do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I've taped a couple ankles, but not for the players. I've taped ankles before.
Is there a way to... Like, you know,
they do like a crisscross. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
There's a whole,
and most of the guys do it like there's a standard way, and then everyone does, you know, a little bit of their own way. But Todd Torricelli was the trainer while I was at the Bucks, and he had tons, decades of experience. And I've watched him tape, you know, hundreds of ankles, so I could do it. I've done it before.
Now, would Todd Torricelli tape like Anthony Becht different than he would Ty J?
Yep. Everyone like their own little specific way.
So like a guy would say, listen, man, I need some more lower support, right, and not upper support.
Yeah, he would know. He knew every player intimately.
Does a taped ankle does it do anything? I mean,
yeah,
does it help you out?
It helps prevent rolling
support.
Yeah. You know, I read a...
Do they have ankle braces?
Yep. Some guys wear that over the tape.
Doesn't compression help with the inflammation or no?
A little bit, yeah. But the other thing is, you know, I read an article years ago about a football coach, and he was getting frustrated because all the players kept twisting their ankles. And so he would make all of his players walk around the field before practice on the outsides of their feet and then on the insides of the feet as ankle injuries.
This
football coach, as a high school football coach, I read a story about him.
Right. And you'd have to walk on your outside to strengthen them?
Just to stretch them. And strengthen them. And so his ankle injuries went down to almost zero after he did that.
Ooh, interesting.
Because you start off every practice walking up. Man,
it looks stupid,
but ankles would snap immediately.
But before I go for a run, I always do 10 steps on the outsides and 10 steps on the insides just to stretch them out.
If you were the team doctor for the Bucks right now and Tom Brady said, hey, Dr. Dan, will you tape me up real quick? What would you say?
Yes, sir.
If you said, if Tom Brady said.
Can I go to the jacuzzi, which is all?
If Tom Brady said, Doc, my wife would like to see how good you are at Botox.
Yep.
Could I book appointment?
Absolutely.
And next thing you know, you're doing, what's her name? Giselle.
Giselle Bündchen.
Isn't she like
Brazilian?
Like just the absolute, like
she's richer than he is.
She's the Tom Brady of models, basically.
She really is right now. I mean,
no,
she's
I mean, like
there.
She's like,
I mean,
the greatest of all time. Is
she's
she not
in the top five? She's a Hall of Famer,
right? She's like one of the greatest of all time,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Like
Cindy
OG,
Crawford. I mean,
Victoria's Secret,
and she's made over $1 billion in her career.
Has she?
Yeah, I think
a billion.
She's,
yeah, like billion. Maybe. Yeah.
I don't think a billion.
I look it up,
but she's
she is. Yeah, yeah. It says that she's the world's first billionaire supermodel, and that was in 2012.
Man, isn't it amazing? How well read I am, bitches.
Super.
Nobody knew that. Now did they?
Yeah, she is the Tom Brady of models.
She is.
And meanwhile, her kids are good looking too.
Tom Brady can't stand her. That's why he's trying to play football until he's 92. He's trying to get out of the house. Could you imagine you have the richest supermodel in history at home and you're like, oh, I got to go hang out with these dudes every single day.
Exactly.
I got to get take showers with these dudes every day.
Well, you know, that's one thing that the players, I'm going to call Anthony here in a minute. That's one thing that the players say they miss the most is the camaraderie.
Yeah.
Is the actual, locker room, you know, the boys, the camaraderie of hanging out.
You know, when we used to do the training camps in Orlando, I'd spend a week or so every summer there with them, and it was so much fun after hours because you play dominoes, you laugh, you play poker.
Ooh,
it was fun.
You mean the boys?
Yeah, with the players.
Anna, you said, "Ooh, dominoes." Is that something we didn't know about? You
no,
are.
No, I don't like dominoes.
What do you
is
like?
It too edgy for
Monopoly?
You?
Yeah. Like Monopoly.
I like playing Monopoly with murders. That's more my style.
Murder Monopoly.
Like if you were to
you think what anybody that played dominoes is a murderer?
No, I don't think that.
Yeah, you did.
I'll never play Monopoly again. I'll tell you that much, though. Too many memories.
Let me call up Anthony. He used to live in Tampa.
He still has a house in Tampa.
I think his kid. Goes to Wirecraft.
Wiregrass, yeah. He's a quarterback.
Rocco?
Yeah, and I think that he's like highly recruited or something like
that.
Yeah,
he got an offer from Iowa State.
Anthony's so Italian, he makes me look Irish.
Hello?
What's up, Anthony Beck? It's Bubba.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, like, working on one of your 14 podcasts right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to be like you. You know, I'm trying to get one going if I can. But, yeah, you know, I'm not. It's freaking snowing. It's crazy.
Where are you? Where are you?
I'm at the Hyatt off the airport. I'm calling the Steelers Ravens game on Westwood One National Radio, and it's snowing. They moved the game to Wednesday instead of today, so I'm here for an extra day.
Lucky you.
Anthony Beck on the phone. He's an 11-year former tight end for all kinds of different teams. Started with the Jets, ended with the Chiefs, and he's one of the guys that went on, and he's been brilliant in broadcasting TV. He does Westwood One. Anthony, how hard? I mean, not. I'm sure you don't have the same accommodations as Troy Aikman and Romo, but how is it? Is it how tough is it to be on the road to call games like you do? Is it tough?
Well, you know, I was doing college football for ESPN for the last 7 years, and I love it. You know, it's been great. You know, it's been good because I get a good mix of both sides. I do the NFL. You know, I covered the Buccaneers pre- and post-game for probably 6 seasons and then went back to the New York Jets where I started my career for my first 5 seasons. They drafted me, and I do their, you know, their pre- and post-game.
Now, are you doing college football now still?
Well, you know, because of the pandemic this past season and my contract was up, they didn't have enough packages to go around, so I actually got pushed away. So, I basically just did the Jets this year, and then I know we'll get into this later, but I did a radio, national radio Monday night with the Bucks, and all of a sudden, you know, I've been able to get a couple more NFL games, which has been great. So it's been a good mix of both sides.
Now, the games that we're watching on TV, whether it be college or pro, are they all being done virtually now, or are the guys actually there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So, like, Herbie and Blackledge and, like, Greg McElroy, those guys are on location. So the three top games will be on location. And then you have some games that are being called out of Bristol. So the announcers will be watching it on the monitors, and they'll call it from the monitors, which is interesting. But the last option, like you talked about, is, you know, they're at home. So they're synced up, play-by-play, color, synced up on their own monitors or within their own home, calling the game. So it's been a crazy year, man. Just, you know, obviously with the travel and everything. So that's kind of the three levels right now that they're doing games.
Anthony, back on the phone. Anthony, do you think that's a slippery slope? Maybe somewhat of a precedent that they may have set to say, hey, listen, we can do it virtually. We've proven that we had to do it under emergency circumstances. But the amount of money we can save, travel, food, all that. And we might as well just call the lower tier games virtually. Do you think that they could maybe set a precedent moving forward?
You know, they were doing they call it Remy games, so they were calling from the studio. I don't know if calling from home is going to be the way. I think getting to a studio, you know, ESPN or wherever, you know, Fox, they got their studios throughout the country. I think that's probably the way I would do it. For me personally, Bubba, I want to be at the game. You know, there's something about football, calling the game in live action. Of course, there's no fans this year, but, you know, moving forward, you know, the getting into it and kind of the whole the scene set, you know, it's a little different with basketball. You know, five guys, you can call something on the court. You know, nobody would really know the difference. Baseball, you know, I would assume, but football, you got replays and you want to see things happen live. For me, that's a big deal for an announcer. But that look, the money's probably going to be the precedent now with a lot of these with these big networks, even the biggest networks at ESPN. So you might see a little more of this moving forward in the future.
Man, how about the money that Romo got? How about that, huh? I mean,
does that make any sense, though? I mean, I don't know. I almost feel like sometimes, listen, Tony was a great player, you know, Dallas Cowboys. I get all that stuff, but man, it's like, you know, how do you? Sometimes I feel like he doesn't even prep for a game. Like, he just rolls in there. He sounds like a fan sometimes. It looks like fans like that. For some reason, you know, they like that
and
casual
Anthony,
beer in the hand.
I can't understand it because I've heard a lot of your games, and I've heard a lot of other guys. I think Tiki, I think Rondé is good. I've heard a lot of former players, and he, by the knowledge of the game and how he's able to communicate, is not that much better than – you know, I think you're as good as he, if not better in a lot of instances. But Anthony Becht isn't going to be getting $20 million a year, I promise.
Well, Romo's been stealing for
15
years.
You need to be my agent. That's the way we need to do it.
I just don't get it. I tend to like Aikman better than Romo as far as doing the games.
Yeah, you know, me too. I kind of like the way Aikman does it because, look, I want a little bit of football. I love the casual, but the those little things like that, I don't know. But, you know, a lot of the fans – that's who they are now, I guess. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, the fantasy fans, all these fans, the younger generation. You know, they know Romo. You know, some of these other guys are getting a little older. So, you know, I mean, the one guy, I mean, if you're Jim Nantz, what's he making, like five? He's got to be pissed off. I heard he's trying to get some money, too, like, you know, trying to get some of that eight figures. But that's just ludicrous. And how about Romo, the luck, right, the horseshoe? He signed that deal literally, like, 2 weeks before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he's so lucky.
So Anthony, by Romo or Aikman or, you know, Buck, the big boys, by those standards, like, how, what's an average week? Like, let's say they're doing a Sunday game of the week. They fly in, like, on what, Thursday, Friday? Like, what's a week entail for those guys?
Yeah, normally they want to try to get to a practice. You know, most of them will come in for a Friday practice. They'll stand on the sidelines. They'll do their deal. But no, things have changed this year. So a lot of guys are flying in, you know, the night before the game because you do everything virtually. You don't talk to the coaches or players in person. You know, those things are tough because, you know, for me as a commentator, when you're talking to coaches with producers, directors, and all these people on phone calls or Zoom, you don't get the real story. You know, my connections with a lot of, for instance, the coaches in college in the NFL, I go down to the field early. I get the one-on-one talk. I get a little bit of the, you know, maybe some of the trick plays, you know, some of the real information. And then when I go in the booth, I'm not going to go out there and just blabber, but you work around it. You find ways to say it so that you give interesting background things to the fans, but you're not giving away, like, you know, the private information. So those are the things that I think are important that are different now in the pandemic.
And do players then, like, when you do have that one-on-one and if you established a relationship if outside of the pandemic under normal broadcast circumstances, then do you develop relationships with guys where he might tell you a little bit more because you and him jive pretty good, or he doesn't like you because you might have said something about him? Like, does that stuff ever happen?
No doubt. Like, you know, perfect example, I don't know if you've been following some of the things, but the Giants, their offensive line coach, the head coach, just supposedly got in a fight, and the guy got fired, and no one really knows the story. Well, you know, I know a couple of coaches on the Giants staff. I mean, if I was calling a Giants game, I'd be on the field, like, hey, you know, what happened? You know, did you throw a left hook? You know, I get the real story, and then, you know, you kind of can portray it the way you want, you know, without calling guys out. But absolutely, I get all kinds of information. The best is obviously, like, you know, hey, you know, when we get past the 50 in the second quarter, we're going to try to run the double reverse pass. And then, you know, then you start sounding like everybody was kind of, you know, hugging Romo because he was predicting plays and all this stuff. Well, you know, most of the time, number one, he's wrong. You know, he probably got like six or seven right in his career. Everybody remembers that. Everybody remembers. And I'm not here to dog Romo. I think he's great. I mean, look, you can't hate the guy for what he's doing, but it's not, you don't predict plays. But if you go to practice, right, and like Thursday or Friday's practice, and they have like a third down and red zone day, you watch things. I start jotting down plays, formations, so that if it comes up, I can maybe predict and say, oh, that was the formation in practice. It may go to number 10 here. And then I can say it. And if I'm right, I'm right. If I'm wrong, nobody really cares. Nobody says anything.
Yeah, nobody. If but you're if, right, if now, if you're right, they blow your spot up. But if
you're
wrong, be like, okay, he's wrong. Whatever. I mean, you're not going to get it right every time.
Yeah, nobody knows.
True other man.
Anthony, how could you, in today's world, could you like, I see Gonzalez on the Fox pregame, and it looks like he could still play. Howie, I don't know if Howie could still play or not. But I mean, could you strap on some shoulder pads, or would you just get killed out there?
No, well, I could block and do some of those things up front. I mean, I still have a little bit of weight to me, and you know, I got a series after that. I can't run if I have to run routes or any of that stuff. I'll die. Like,
what if Khalil Mack smashed you?
I could block Khalil Mack. See, this is the thing everybody sees. The game has changed, man. The generation of players now, almost I feel like they don't care as much. They do. They work hard, but the money and everything involved. When I was playing, and it wasn't too long ago, guys. We're talking like 8-9 years ago, and I saw the evolution of the NFL. It's just a younger league. It's, you know, you didn't have the, you know, when I walked in the Jets locker room, I had Wayne Grabet, Vinny Testaverde, you know, and then I came to the Buccaneers. I had all these, you know, older players, greasy, but you don't have that anymore, man. It's just a younger league. They save their money. They extend their rosters. And really, you see, when you watch the games, you see more mistakes. You see penalties. You see, sloppy play.
Well, they don't practice.
Honestly, I
don't think that coaches can even really get on guys' asses anymore, can they, Anthony?
That's one of the biggest things. When I was drafted to the Jets, Bill Parcells was the GM. And listen, there are no more Bill Parcells. Bill Belichick's the only guy that has that similar. Now it's, you know, the last couple of years, and of course now you got to coddle and hug these first rounders. You don't want to upset them because they're so mentally fragile. And if they mess up, then they'll want to get a trade, and they'll start going on Twitter. I mean, it's obscene. But a real quick funny story. When I was my rookie year, my first game, I got drafted in the first round with the Jets. There were four of us in the first round, first time in the history of the NFL. Our first preseason game was against the New Orleans Saints at home. I had like four catches, a touchdown, and literally, you know, I thought I was big, you know, can't curse on it, but I thought I was big crap when I came off the field. The next day, now this would never happen in the NFL, we were full pads the next day in training camp. You would never do that now in the NFL. You'd be out in shorts and a t-shirt. Bill Parcells is at the end of the field. I'm stretching out. He's like, hey, Beck, come here. You know, so I'm jogging over with my chest pumped out, thinking like, you know, this guy's going to hug me.
And this isn't the coach. This is the GM.
He's the GM. Yeah, he's the GM. He was a coach the year before, and then he transferred the GM.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he's going to give me a big bear hug. He's like, hey, Beck, let me tell you something. He's like, if you ever, with some explosives, ever go out there and block like that again, I'll send your ass so fast back to West Virginia. You'll never know. And it's kind of like I opened my eyes. It was the most humbling experience. And honestly, that was the day that it got me 12 years in the NFL, because he took the diva out of me, first rounder, and I became a, you know, lunch pail, blue-collar guy, and it changed me that day. But you don't get that now. If you did that now, you have a guy he would drop six balls. You know, he'd be calling his agent. You know, he's all upset. The coach yelled at me. It's just it's crazy, man.
Snowflakes.
And you were a first rounder, were you not?
Yeah, I was the 27th pick of the 2000 draft. The Jets had four first round picks that year. Myself, John Abraham, one of the best pass rushers in NFL history. Sean Ellis, a very good defensive end, and then Chad Pennington came out of that draft. It was funny because Chad Pennington was supposed to go to the 49ers or the Steelers that year. He ends up dropping at the 17th pick, and I was supposed to go 17. So I dropped down to the 27th pick, which is still great, but I always tell Chad,
how much cost you?
$10 million. So I tell him he owes me some of that money, you know, over the years, every time I see him, especially around Christmas time.
When you walked into the Jets as a rookie, first rounder, was there a veteran that took you under his, you know, his wing, proverbial wing, and said, hey kid, this is how you may have been slick daddy over here, but this is how it works?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the locker rooms back in the day there were a little different, and you know, you weren't hazed, but you know, you had some rookie initiations, you had to do some things, you picked on, you know, I was in kind of wedged in between Wayne Krabet and Vinny Testaverde. Obviously, I got to play early, so I got to build a relationship. I'll tell you, though, the one guy that I'm glad that I was tight with, because we had the same agent, it just was crazy, it worked out, but you definitely want to be on his side. We had Brian Cox, was one of our linebackers.
Oh, he was a monster.
you wanted to be one. If you weren't on his side, then you were going to be singing. You're going to be doing crazy crap on the stage before practices and all that stuff. We had the same agent. He gave me some advice. He's like, listen, man, be the first one to sing. You'll be over with it. And I got out. So he kind of took me under his wing a little bit. But if you weren't under his wing, man, he would get you pretty much on a daily basis.
Anthony Becht on the phone. He has all kinds of podcasts. He does all kinds of announcing on the pro and on the collegiate level. Go ahead,
Seth. I actually had a question because he's calling the game the Steelers-Ravens game.
Yeah, whatever. When's it scheduled for now?
It's like 3:40 tomorrow. Anthony, are you okay with the afternoon start time? I know everybody's complaining because of the tree lighting that's making it an afternoon game.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you're ready to get home, so that works for you, right?
Yeah, I literally, guys, it's snowing. Like, every car in the parking lot's covered, the entire airport, the runway, everything's snowing here. I don't care when it's at it. You know, calling games is great for me. I love it. It's a great experience. Like I said, I got to do the Monday night football game with the Buccaneers and the Rams last week on a kind of a funny story there, on 2 hours' notice because of someone backed out.
Jeez.
And it actually, I got some rave reviews and then the New York Post, and all of a sudden now, next week I got another game. So, hey, listen, it's great to be out here. And
You were running routes for your kid, and all of a sudden you get your wife says, honey, they want you to go do play-by-play at Ray J. Hurry, but you get your suit.
Yeah, I had no suit. They just basically called me and said, don't get dressed, whatever you're wearing. Just come on over, and I did, and I rolled in there at like 7:45. The game was at 8, I believe, 8:15, 8:20. And I, as soon as I walked in, hey, 3 minutes to the pregame play, what the breakdown for the game is. I'm like, all right, jumped in. Kevin Harlan, who's a pro, he's one of the best in the business.
Yeah.
Got to work with him, and it was a good deal.
How good's your son, Rocco? Does he got a cannon on him?
Yeah, he's a good player. I'll tell you, he's got the intangibles that a lot of this generation don't have, because I won't allow that to creep in. It may happen when he goes to college, but for now, he's got great work ethic. And
How big is he?
He's 6'1", 185. He can spin it. He's still growing. Loves the weight room, loves the train, and, he can spin it. Bob, I'll tell you, he's got a shot to be good. He's way, way past me when I was coming out of high school in the same – he'll be a senior. He's a junior now.
Oh.
But, he's got offers. I had no offers. I had one offer, like, literally a month before signing after my senior year. He's got about 7 offers. He's got 25 schools looking at him. And it's been fun, man. He's a great kid, too. He takes after his mother, not his dad. But he's a great kid, and, he does a great job, man. I'm proud of him.
Will you have a say-so on where he goes? I mean, is there Florida? Is it,
Well, a lot of people ask me, is he going to go to West Virginia? Because that's where, I'm from there. And,
I wouldn't send him there.
Well, I'm like 2 hours away from it, and it's snowing out. So I don't know, you got to throw balls in the snow, be tough. But, Iowa State is a really good school. That they've offered him Wake Forest Educational, ACC. They've been productive. There's a couple Florida States looking at him. They have not offered Cincinnati. They're one of the better schools in the country.
How about Cincinnati coming out of nowhere? Where the hell did that come from? Is it the coach?
Yeah, Fickell's great, man. He's played at Ohio State, from Ohio State, now, from Ohio. He's, recruited well, and they got some athletes now. I don't know if they're going to get enough love, them or BYU, the smaller schools, to get in there, but I'll tell you, it's been a great year, man. He's done it. I think he had 3 straight 10-win seasons.
I'll tell you the program, buddy. And it's from the kid that's from down here, the kid from, I think he was from Pasco High and then went to Tampa Tech, IU.
Penix. Yeah.
That kid's a stud, too, isn't he?
He is. The funny thing, him and my son worked out, the same quarterback trainer down in the Tampa Bay area. They got to train a little bit before the season started. What happened, though? Penix, after this past game, it just got announced yesterday, he tore his ACL again.
Oh,
he's
man.
Out for the season.
Ugh.
I know, it's brutal.
Oh,
great kid,
man.
Though. I'll tell you, great kid.
Hey, is Harbaugh in trouble at Michigan? He's got to be, Anthony. I mean, your royalty could only take you so long. I mean, he's got to be in trouble.
I don't get it. I don't know how he's not winning games there. I mean, he's still got a ton of recruits. Now, he lost a ton of guys, especially on the defense of the NFL this past season. But you would think you'd be able to manufacture, even LSU. I mean, how are they have a losing, I think they have a 500 record. How do you not have guys getting cranked out, have a quarterback at least? I mean, after you have Joe Burrow, How do you not have a quarterback getting ready to play? But I don't know. Everybody keeps talking about Harbaugh going back to the NFL. I just don't see his personality. Like
I don't think he works in the NFL.
Talk to your kid. Would you be excited to go to wherever he's coaching? He's just not like a rock. I don't know. He's just a weird dude.
I mean, after Andy Reid, after Bruce Arians, there's not too many old school guys left. It's this new wave. You know, Matt LaFleur. That's the new NFL coach. I think
Kingsbury.
You know, after I think Sean Payton would be an old school guy, but barely. He's kind of right there on the cusp, right?
Yeah, I mean, the old school guys that are around, you know, are Tomlin. They're still cranking out wins now, you know. But, yeah, there's just a younger push, you know. And I think it's because of these quarterbacks now, the younger quarterbacks playing in these offenses. You see, you know, you get Kingsbury, who couldn't be better than 500 at Texas Tech, but he's got the offense that works with Kyler Murray, and it makes sense, right? So, you know, you got to fit the scheme of the quarterbacks you draft, because if not, you know, you got issue. I mean, in talking about fitting the schemes, Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, I mean, everybody's talking about how that scheme doesn't fit. And, you know, they've had their issues throughout the season. It's been up and down. But,
I mean, don't you think that the Arians needs to have Brady and more of it? Like, if you watch Mahomes, you know, a few nights ago, he doesn't. I mean, it's quick. It's boom, boom, boom. To me, it looks like we're going for the long ball too much. And I think Tom Brady can dink and dunk you 7 and 9 and 10 yards like the old Joe Montana all day. But, you know, he's not a Mahomes-type passer, and I think that they have not built the offense. I don't think they've done the offense around Brady right, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought that when they came together that they would kind of mutually blend in. I mean, listen, if I'm a coordinator, I'm sitting down and say, okay, this is kind of how we do it. Tell me, Tom, what's good? What's important to you so we can blend it in? I don't see that. And you're right. The vertical passing game, that's the offense that Arian has. I think it's a little archaic.
I think it's Mike McCarthy, you know, archaic. I mean, right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, look, it's high impact. I mean, you're going to get some big plays. I mean, look, Tom Brady can still throw the deep ball. But, like, you know, for instance, in the game, they was 3rd and 13 in the second half. They throw this bomb down the middle to Chris Godwin. They get themselves in great field position. It's 20-7. And then the next play, they throw a go route to Scotty Miller. Like, why? Run the ball. Do screen passes. You know, everybody talks about they don't motion, which I don't think is a big deal. But, man, if I'm on defense and nobody moves, how easy is that? I mean,
all the new offenses has, I mean, it's built on motion, isn't it?
Bubba, they got two Pro Bowl receivers in Evans and Godwin. They got the greatest tight end to ever play the game. They got, you know, three backs who, look, I'm not a big a Fournette guy. I love Rojo. I think he needs to get more handoffs. But they got LeSean McCoy. People understand this. LeSean McCoy is one of the top 10 running backs in receptions in the league history. He doesn't even touch the field. Like, that's one of the biggest weapons for Brady you can have. Why doesn't he play? I don't understand. You throw Antonio Brown, who I'm not a big fan of, but, man, it's like, how do you stop this offense? But yet they find ways to stick their foot in their butt.
How do you stop it? But I think the first four possessions last game was three and outs, and you could see Brady coming off the field just mad as hell.
Well, just so you know, Bubba, the report last night was Bruce Arians said that Tom Brady picks all the plays. We call what he picks. We just have to get better. And they said he's getting more comfortable each week. So apparently Tom Brady picks all the plays, and then they're the ones that call him. So
wow,
yeah.
I mean, Anthony, is that how it works?
Maybe they're just showing him a bunch of plays that he doesn't like, but he's got to pick 10 or something. I don't know. You know, it's just, to me, the plays that work are play actions, the Gronk throws, you know, the crossing routes, you know, anything that you know, when you have a little running game built around it, you know, but some of these things look forced to me. And it just doesn't, you know, when you see Tom patting the ball a couple times, it's like, you know, how are they not open? Like, what are they running? And then you look at the film and it's like, you know, three go routes. And, you know, it's like, how do you... Your teams are just sitting there waiting.
Well, I mean, and arguably, there's not even a close second in receiving a core, is there? I mean, if you look at all in, you look at your...
Well, the Chiefs, yeah. Outside of the Chiefs and the Bucks, who's better?
I don't even know the Chiefs are better. I mean, they may get the ball a little bit better, but I don't think talent-wise, wide receiver, tight end, slot, I don't think they're better than the Bucks. The Bucks are, I mean, look, they might have too much talent.
Yeah, you know, well, it's interesting because as a play caller, the good play callers can manufacture plays with all those kind of guys. Byron Leftwich, to me, and I know Byron, we played together. He's a little younger than I am. But I just don't quite know if, you know, sometimes when he's calling plays, I'm not just, it's just kind of like you're just plucking it out and calling. Like when you watch the Rams, right, the Rams attacked what the Buccaneers defense was doing. When you watch the Saints play the Bucs, they attacked what the defense, they had a plan. I mean, things were different. You scheme differently. You add new things, new wrinkles. When I watch the Bucs, it's kind of like the same stuff, you know, I don't know. It's just, you know, are you really tricking anybody what you're doing? And I'm not talking about trick plays.
It's just predictable.
I'm just talking about scheme.
Predictable.
It's very predictable.
Yeah, it's predictable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anthony Beck on the phone. Anthony, out of all the guys you ever played with, from the Jets to the Chiefs, Cardinals, Rams, Bucks, who was the baddest dude? Like, as far as, not necessarily statistically, or like, but just if you had to be in a fight, who had your back? Like, would it be a Ty? I don't know if Ty J. Armstrong was around when you were at the Bucks. I mean, would it have been a Warren Sapp? Who's like the, who was the baddest dude?
Dan Diaco.
Shut up.
Yeah, if I needed a Band-Aid, you were the baddest.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Stitch me up here, plastic boy. Like, who's the, Anthony, who's the baddest dude? Like, just straight badass. Brian Cox?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about, listen, okay, so here's a little story. Like, Brian Cox, you know, you remember the neck roll he would wear. Like,
yeah.
Brian Cox, as he was the hardest, him and Shadetree Jones, Marvin Jones, I remember a Florida State linebacker a long time ago. These two dudes were the inside linebackers for the Jets, and, like, when I was playing tight end, I'd have to go and play, like, motion back, play fullback, and then ISO these guys. You want to talk about a stinger, burner, like jacking your neck up every time you hit those guys. Like Marvin Jones was a straight, like it felt like you were hitting a stone. But Brian Cox, he was a dude that like literally he never lifted a weight. Like he didn't care about the weight room, but he'd hit you so freaking hard. Those two guys, man, I'm telling you, I would dread when the coach would call those kind of plays to go up the middle because they were literally the hardest hitters. I'm talking about hitting stone. That's how hard these dudes hit you. Old school guys, man, that just, man, they just thumped you every single time.
How about Reggie? Did you ever go against Reggie?
No, I wasn't that old. So Reggie was a little bit out of the league. But I'll tell you, you know, like, Strahan was tough. You know, he was probably the toughest guy I had to block. You know, Jason Taylor, who wasn't a strong guy, but just a long arms, very technically sound, hard to get your hands on. By the best guy I ever had to block and, Willie McGinnis, he's on the NFL Network now. Most underrated outside linebacker, played for the Patriots for all those Super Bowl seasons. He's got the most sacks in Super Bowl games. They played in so many. He was legit one of the better underrated players that I played in my career. You know, it's a funny story about him. He used to kick my butt when he was with the Patriots. And I used to tell him, you know, one game I tried to get at him coming out, and I never could beat him. He finally got, like, that dumpster contract with like the Cleveland Browns, like 3 years after the Patriots, and we played him when I was at the Bucks. And I finally blocked him. Like I finally got him. He's like, "Listen, man, I'm done. Man. I'm collecting my check, man. You can do whatever you want to start laughing."
He said, "Hey, Beck, you got a good little pinch block on me, man, but I ain't even trying right now, brother."
Exactly. That was kind of how it worked out.
But, Ty J. Armstrong's a good friend of mine, and Ty J. told me a story one time that he was playing for the Bucks and he was playing against Reggie White for the Packers. And Ty J was a tight end as well. And he said, you know, occasionally, and you probably would be able to attest to this, you know, a guy will take a playoff or something. You know, it's hot. You know, maybe the ball's going opposite direction. So he said Reggie took a few plays off and Ty J got a couple good blocks in on him, right? And so Ty J said the biggest mistake he ever made is he started really, you know, telling – Reggie, man, you ain't nothing. Reggie, I got you all game. You know, like just talking smack, right? He said, Reggie then said, "God bless you, son," and then went and absolutely destroyed him the rest of the game. Was doing Bible verses and telling him, "I'm so sorry." And Ty's like, "Man,
Reggie was the best." I mean, I grew up in Philly, watched him as an Eagles, and I mean, man, some of the arm throws, I mean, some of the biggest men he used to throw was unbelievable.
That was another guy that never lifted weights, was Reggie White.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard he was just, you know, like, you know, farmer strong or something. Just nuts.
Now, Anthony, a lot of my friends, well, Seth and some, they've all made fun of me when I tell everybody that I have these. But I have Reggie White's last pair of Pro Bowl pants that he wore. In the 2000 Pro Bowl, it was his last Pro Bowl, and my buddy Darren Kearns was the equipment manager for the Bucks, and Tony Dungy was the all-star coach, and the coach brings his support crew to Honolulu, and all the players, I don't know if they do it nowadays, but after the game, they threw their pants all into a pile. And
you had to get washed.
And my buddy, my buddy who was the equipment manager, Darren Kearns, just took them, and they're embroidered. They got his name on him and everything. And then Dion saw him at a golf tournament or something and got him signed. And it's Reggie White, Corinthians 1:13. But don't you think that maybe his family would want that? I don't want any money. I wouldn't want any money for him.
You want Anthony Beck to deliver the pants to Reggie White's family?
But is that stupid to think that their family might want his last pair of Pro Bowl pants? Is that dumb?
I don't know. I mean, listen, man. You know, these guys don't. I mean, nobody. I don't know anybody that's collected pants. So I don't think a family would want them. I mean, all right.
Even Anthony Peck said nobody wants
those
pants.
I mean, once you're not putting the pants and you're not like sticking them near your face, I don't know. I mean, hopefully they're matted in a nice frame.
Yeah, they are. They are. God dang it. You know, I was doing so good with Anthony until I brought in the Reggie White Pro Bowl pants. Now he thinks I'm a weirdo.
Hey, it's a collector's item, man, no doubt.
Anthony, good luck. Your game was what, tomorrow? Is it the game tomorrow or today?
Yeah, tomorrow, 3:40 p.m. kickoff. Be Westwood One Radio, all the national cities, and then Sirius NFL Radio will carry it as well.
Hey, congrats on that. That's a great gig, man. Congrats.
I appreciate it, man, yeah.
What's that, Lummy? What do you got?
Oh, can I ask Mr. Beck a question?
Yes, go ahead,
I'm a degenerate gambler, and I was trying to get your insight on the game. If you think the Steelers are going to cover the -5 and the over and under 45 with
Lummy,
the snow.
I don't know if Anthony Beck can, as a broadcaster, answer that question when you set it up that I'm a degenerate gambler.
Oh, I mean, I'm just a normal fan.
I don't know if Westwood wants Anthony Beck to, making guys lose their mortgages or something like that.
Is it only -1? I thought it was double digits.
No, it's -5 right now. -5.
What's
really?
The pit. Pitt's -5 and the over and under 45. You said it's snowing a lot, so you think it's going to be a low scoring game?
Well, it's snowing. The under could be an issue. I don't know offensively, with no Lamar Jackson, they got a bunch of guys down.
Andrews.
Sneed is not playing. Mark Andrews, these are the go-to targets. I mean, RG3 hasn't thrown a ball in a while, man. I gotta think it's going to be very conservative. I'd say the under would probably be your best bet, but, with the weather, too, you never know. Crazier things that happen, but just if I'm looking at this game, I can't imagine a ton of points. Now, the Steelers may put up some points. They got weapons all over, but you talked about receiving corps. They probably got something that matches the Buccaneers and the Chiefs as well. So, Big Ben's having a nice season, and, they're undefeated, guys. I mean, they're playing good ball.
How cool was it when you played, was Lambeau Field cool, or was it just old and decrepit? Or both?
Lambeau was a bet. No, that was one of the best places to play. The field itself is pristine. I mean, if you play there before November 1st, it's beautiful. We used to play a couple preseason games there when I was with the Buccaneers. And, look, they got the best fans. I mean, like, they sell out the stadium in preseason. Like, they love their team. It's a great environment to play. And they've made some upgrades to it. But, man, one of the prettiest experiences fields to play on in the National Football
League. Yeah, I've been three games and two post-remodel, and the remodel is just unbelievable. People don't realize that Lambeau Field fits 86,000 people with its new
It's right in somebody's backyard. It's a neighborhood, and then all of a sudden there's a stadium. It's great.
Yeah. It is. Hey, Anthony, let's make more often, man. Get you on from
anytime,
time to time,
brother.
To promote what you got going on and what game you're doing for the week. And I love having you on, buddy.
Yeah, your fans can follow me on Twitter, Anthony_Beck. I'm all over that. That's where my podcast links are and all that stuff. I got a Bucks podcast, and I also have a Jets one if you've got some New York fans there. And I have a Spit and Fire podcast with my buddy Dan Gross out of New York. We talk about sports. We talk about gambling. We talk about fantasy.
He also has a home fixer-upper podcast and a lawn maintenance podcast as well. Anthony Beck. Yeah. And a college recruiting podcast and everything.
That's the podcast.
Hey, Anthony, thank you, my friend, and I look forward to talking to you again, buddy.
Happy holidays, guys. Appreciate it. Doc, take care, man.
Thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate it.
Bye, Anthony.
You got it.
Love that guy. I've had him on lots of times before.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's very
smart, good-looking wife.
Very insightful.
Stayed healthy in the NFL. Played, 156 games in a row consecutively?
I think so,
I mean, that's a third place all time.
11 or 12 years.
It's amazing.
Hey, Doc, you got a Band-Aid?
Yeah.
He told you. When you talk about how tough you were, he said he called you a Band-Aid boy. And you know what? He wanted to call you an F-boy, but he could only call you a Band-Aid boy.